today. We're going to be hearing the Red Dog project, but I would like first to do a little committee business. Senators Vic Fisher, Eliason, Jarrah, Coghill, and Sturgiluski are on hand. We will be teleconferencing the Red Dog bills. We have people standing by in Anchorage and Fairbanks. Kotzebue, Homer, and Selwick are also on the line. We have a number of people on hand here today. We intend to go from now until 4 o'clock, hopefully, to be able to have everyone have an opportunity to speak that wishes to do so. A couple of things on committee business. I would like to introduce on Monday two pieces of legislation from the Resource Committee. One would be dealing with a guides bill. We worked with the guides, the Alaska Professional Hunters, the Guide Board, Fish and Game. It's a cleanup on statutes. Guide bill is up next year for sunset. Also have a Senate joint resolution. We've gotten to a few of you relating to the Americanization of the fishery off the coast of Alaska. There's action in Congress regarding an attempt to Americanize that fishery, and it seems important to speak to that issue. I would like now to, as a first item of business before we get into the Red Dog bills, to handle a committee substitute for Senate Bill 201 Resources. This was held last week, Senator Rohde's bill, and dealt with the creation of a public access fund. There was some difficulty over how the fund would be administered. The bill had a committee set up, and we had some questions raised about that. So we have gone back to the drawing boards, and Kevin Bruce is here for Senator Rohde. I wonder if you could speak, Kevin, after you identify yourself, as to what you've accomplished in this bill and how the sponsor feels about the bill.
Certainly. Thank you, Madam Chairman. For the record, I'm Kevin Bruce. Thank you. Primarily, last time, the major concerns, I believe, centered around the fact that this the original bill established a committee, which the administration was not in favor of any more committees, as we probably all know. So what we have done in this fashion of this bill is had the Commissioner of Fish and Game actually administer the fund and take care of the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities and Natural Resources. The Commissioner of Fish and Game will consult with those departments, those commissioners, prior to making any purchases or leases of easements or rights of way for public access. The only other change of any significance was the fact that we did add the ability for the commissioner to lease land in case there was a fantastic deal where you could get some acreage for a dollar a year in perpetuity or something. Other than that, well, pretty much as the committee looked at last time, and of course we allowed the commission to adopt regulations to carry out the provisions of the chapter.
We have had an indication, in addition to the sponsor's support, that the Department of Natural Resources, Department of Transportation, Fish and Game all support this approach. Does the committee have questions, Senator Jarrah?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. On page two, I guess I have a little question here. The title is given for public access, recreation use of water. There's a clause here that states that the instrument conferring title on state, the clause requiring that the land be used in perpetuity.
Sorry to interrupt, this is moderator in Anchorage. We're not hearing transmission.
Yeah. That the land be used in perpetuity for public access and providing that if the property ceases to be used for public access, it will automatically revert to the grantor. Now, I guess I have some problems with perpetuity, and anything short of perpetuity could represent 50, 100 years, and it should at that time the land have a different use to it, I think it would be restricted with the clause in perpetuity there. And then also, when we get down to the grantor, I would have some reservations there if I had land that was designated as public use, that 50 years from now, suppose it was to be changed, I would have first option, but 50 years from now, I may not be here. Seems to me that something should be in there that either my heirs or my estate or something should have that first option of receiving that land.
Mr. Bruce, I'm sure that the reason that was provided was that oftentimes, if people know it's for a public purpose, you're able to acquire at a much lower cost than people are oftentimes happy to have that happen. Did you have any comments about the concerns raised by Senator Jarrell?
Your rationale is exactly correct. As far as the rationale for that particular clause, I think this is actually a fairly standard arrangements in these types of land grants and purchases.
Senator, I wonder, this bill does go next to finance. That issue was not raised at the public hearing. Unless you want to make a specific amendment, I would appreciate moving the bill on, or, you know, I mean, we can hold it again to address that. But as I say, I would like to see the bill move forward if at all possible.
Yeah, Madam Chairman, I have no problems with the bill moving, and I don't know if we've dealt with conceptual amendments, but I would be inclined to go along with something to the effect there that, you know, that the either the heirs or the estate are taken care of, or if it is covered elsewhere, like for example in a will, if the grantor by declaration in a will foregoes any future claim, you know, that should be, you know, we could include that in here.
Senator, I could do that by several ways. It's just to carry that message, to write a letter on to the finance committee. I think the point is well taken, to be sure that heirs and assigns are accommodated. That's your basic interest. Is that not correct?
That's correct, Madam Chair.
Senator Fisher?
Madam Chair, I'm sorry I wasn't here when this bill was heard before. In subsection B, it states, a commissioner of revenue shall provide applicants with a form addressed to the commissioner on which the applicant may pledge, and so on. I have two questions on that clause. One is, can that be the regular permanent fund application form? Number two, could an applicant pledge a portion of a dividend rather than the entire
Response by staff, please.
Madam Chairman, yes, it could be the regular permanent fund dividend form. In fact, in the fiscal note provided by the Department of Revenue, they specified that would be. There was not a provision, however, for pledging a portion of the permanent fund dividend. I think the feeling was there that that would bring in more revenues, it would also increase tremendously the amount of work necessary.
Senator, Madam Chair, there's a bill that's been introduced and co-sponsored by many people to establish some kind of a checkoff for the permanent from permanent fund dividends contributions to the to an Olympic Winter Olympics fund. It seems to me that we ought to start looking at these things. Maybe in finance, this could a matter could be taken care of. I don't need to hold up the bill.
All right, we have two issues then. One, the possibility of a portion. And also the heirs or estate. It would be, are there other concerns that the committee has? Would be my recommendation, rather than sending a bill forward that does not meet those concerns, that we hold it until, and I will bring it back on Monday. We'll work with the sponsor to address those two, and hopefully that will be able to move very quickly then on Monday. So. Rather than send it forward without it, I would prefer to do that. Senator Jarrell, if you have an additional comment.
Yeah. Madam Chairman, I guess that section, that phrase in perpetuity still bothers me, and maybe if I could be convinced here that that's necessary to stay in, that's fine too.
Fine. Thank you very much. We'll have a discussion on that, and I will have a bill back in we hope final form on Monday. Thank you very much, Mr. Bixson. You'll work with my staff, and we'll address those issues. Senator Jarrell, fine.
Minutes.
We're ready now to open the public hearing on the Long Mountain Transportation Project, affectionately known by as Red Dog. We have two bills, SB 279, SB 280. We have sent up over the teleconference copies of the committee substitute for Senate Bill 279. And committee substitute for 280. Those are very similar to House bills that were just yesterday sent out of committee. We worked very closely with the House in attempting to have input on the same type of conditions. I would respect from the committee your motion to bring the committee substitutes before the committee at this time, and then we'll go into the public hearing. It's my intention to allow the public an opportunity to be heard first, and then we will go to various members of the Industrial Development Authority and to the administration to speak. But we do have a number of people standing by. The committee substitute was apparently sent out just on SB 280, since our version is very close to the House version. So I would request a committee, moving on a committee substitute for each of these two bills so that we could have it before us.
Right.
Senator Fisher?
Yeah. I was just wondering specifically what changes it might be.
You're asking for just a substitute for 280?
This bill did it. We are spending money.
On Senate Bill 279, the only change would be on page 2, where we have marked out on page 2, line 5, after 1610-370, that are secured by limited entry permits. On line 16, page 2, beginning after limited entry permits, cross out in an amount equal to the principal balance of loans appropriated under section 3 of this act.
Madam Chair, I'll move the proposed committee substitute. Madam Chair, I'll move the proposed committee substitute for 279.
Asking unanimous consent.
Asking
we have a motion before us to approve the committee substitute for SB 279. Hearing no objection, so ordered. And then we have a committee substitute for Senate Bill 280, resources. It's the same as a committee substitute for, or similar to House Bill 105. I have asked that the committee staff briefly report the changes from Senate Bill 280. Mr. Holman?
Madam Chairman, did it?
Yeah.
Committee substitute for 280 should be focused on your current members.
It's in and up about it, the bottom here, the minor.
This is. Basically, the committee substitute for Senate Bill 280 is contains the same conditions or similar conditions to the original Senate Bill 280, but it was done in a form that more closely resembles the House version that was adopted yesterday, which was part of House Bill 105. And the conditions are very similar in there. I think rather than go through each one, that there are no major differences between the two bills.
I would say, Senator.
Hey, Madam Chair, subject to our ability to deal with this bill further, I will move the committee substitute for Senate Bill number 280.
All right, ask unanimous consent.
Ask unanimous consent.
Hearing no objection, so ordered. Basically, there are some a few wording changes, and I would hope that we'll take a look at each condition prior to taking action on it. But it's just so that we will have a common bill before us. So that does not imply, Senator Fisher, that you are locked into all these conditions. As a matter of fact, we will. We've added the condition, for example, on local hire, and I. That all of these contracts will be subject to Title 36. So there are a number of things that we'll be hearing about as we go through. We'll go first on to the teleconference system. I understand that we have six people standing by in Anchorage, two in Fairbanks, and a number here on hand. Let's hear first from Anchorage. We'll take two from there, go to Fairbanks for two individuals, and then back to Juneau for a couple, and we'll try and move along. I want to get all of your testimony, but hope that you can be as succinct as possible, but we're looking forward to hearing from you. Who's first in Anchorage, please?
My name is Tony Dunn. I'm a geologist here. And I'd just like to address the basic problem that we have in general, and which is the infrastructure doesn't exist in Alaska. If you look at other countries, such as Canada, USSR, Greenland, or Scandinavia, where they haven't had the infrastructure, those governments have provided the assistance to help in the development of the resources. And I think that we should use this as an example, and I fully support the state funding of Red Dot. And I would like to point out that further this issue is being watched carefully by the mining industry in general. Red Dog is a world-class mineral deposit. If the funding does not go through and Cominco walks away from a deposit of this size, it will sound the death knell to mining in Alaska. If a deposit like Red Dog can't be developed, then there isn't much sense for other companies to stick around. In conclusion, if the state of Alaska truly wants to develop a broad economic resource base, then we should develop what we have, and namely that's our mineral resources, and do, as a state, whatever is necessary to assist in their development. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Appreciate that. And who's next at Anchorage, and then we'll move to Fairbanks for two.
Mr. Bob Richards is next to testify in Anchorage.
Fine. Welcome, Bob. Would you identify yourself, and then we'll look forward to your testimony.
Thank you, Senator. I'm Bob Richards of 2006 Atwood Drive in Anchorage. I'm representing myself. I appreciate the opportunity to make this testimony. You know, for several years, the administration and the majority of the legislators, and I think most of you on this committee, in your campaign processes, have been claiming support for the legitimate role of state government to serve as a catalyst or economic development by the private sector by using the state's wealth to stimulate the resource development projects. And in this context, I think that you should be abundantly aware of the fact that the eyes of many Alaskans and many non-Alaskans are really on you as you consider this project, because in the minds of many of us, it's a test of the sincerity of many of you who enunciated at least support of this, of the conceptual notion. And in this context, this project has assumed immense symbolism, probably much more than it ought to have, but nevertheless, there is immense symbolism associated with this project as a test of where the legislature and the administration really stand on this conceptual issue. Now, in that context, it seems to me that this is about as ideal a little project as you can get to serve as a prototype for the state stimulating private investment. It's an absolutely ideal size. It doesn't involve hundreds of millions of dollars or billions of dollars as some hydroelectric projects or Kinnick Arm crossings or this sort of thing. It's a workable size. It's self-liquidating. It's absolutely perfectly timed in 1987 and 88, when we expect a downturn in state capital construction projects, which is going to have an adverse effect on the economy. It has, in other words, it has a nice little counter-cyclical dimension to it. It has significant downstream benefits by stimulating subsequent resource development. It has substantial ancillary benefits, and by that I mean reducing the cost of fuels and supplies to the citizens of the area. It represents a marvelous cooperative effort with Alaska's native corporations. Just about everybody's in the act on this one. It's a rural activity. It's not a darn Anchorage urban activity. It represents a good financial return of over 14%. By the way, to put it in perspective, today U.S. government bonds of a maturity of 30 years are going for about 11.25%. So, as I say, just about from every standpoint, this thing represents about as ideal a project as you can get. And one can't help but have the feeling if you don't go for this one, I guess we really find out where you stand, because this is just about as ideal as you can get. I think it's too bad in this context. I think it's too bad that the administration has been so tardy in finally getting this project to you, and that they have been so deficient in their preparing a contract. So you are forced to get into the act to the extent that you've had to in terms of working out the details of the deal. Now, having stated that, just a couple of important distinctions, I think, have to be made. I've seen some communication between some of the members of the committee and Cominco and the administration wherein the notion of the return on investment is raised, the notion of what we ought to include in return on investment. And as a financial analyst, it's my perception that the generally held notion of measuring return on investment, in fact, includes all of the incremental costs and benefits that flow from an investment, not just the direct costs and benefits. In other words, if you're a manufacturing plant and you are manufacturing products A and B, and you're considering manufacturing product C, and you measure the investment in plant and equipment and so forth that it takes to manufacture product C, the return of that investment is not just the net income from product C, but let's suppose that product C is competitive with product A and the sales of product A goes down. Then you have to subtract that out, and let's suppose that product C is complementary with product B and the sales of product B go up. You have to add in those incremental sales, all of that being added into the impact of the investment to produce product C. Now, what I'm getting at here is that indeed, it is not only appropriate, but you must include all of the secondary and tertiary and other costs and benefits that flow from this project. In other words, it is not only appropriate, but in fact imperative that the effect on transfer payments up there in that area are added into return on investment, i.e. to the extent that welfare payments and other unemployment benefits go down in that area, those have to be added into the return on the investment. You have to add in the multiplier effect, i.e. to the extent that the sellers of goods and services to the plant themselves turn around and buy goods and services and generate incomes which are taxed by the state, those all have to be added in. And the notion that some of you have raised that maybe that's not appropriate is in fact just not in accord with conventional financial analysis. The other distinction that I think has to be made on this thing is I know when I read the newspaper articles on this matter, there's some interesting words that emerge. Words like help and aid and assistance. And although those words are valid, I think they're very inappropriate in that they reflect an incorrect conceptual framework. And by that I mean it's totally irrelevant what Cominco or NANA is going to make out of this deal. That's totally irrelevant. All we want to look at is what the state of Alaska and the citizens of the state are going to make out of this deal. Indeed, in any rational business deal, both sides win. One side loses, and it seems to me it's an irrational business deal. Indeed, business is a positive sum game. I know that people have mentioned to me that whenever you buy a piece of land, good Lord, don't get hung up on what the seller paid for it originally. Just take a look at what you're going to pay for it and what that does for you in terms of what you're going to do with the land. So this getting hung up on this notion that we're helping Cominco or aiding Cominco or assisting Cominco, that's totally irrelevant. The state of Alaska is not in the business of aiding Cominco. The state of Alaska is in the business of aiding itself and its citizens. And it's solely in that context that the project should be analyzed. And it seems to me it's solely in that context that the project is an absolute winner. Well, I'm sorry, I didn't realize my remarks were going to take so long, but To those, it's a marvelous project. It has a meaningful financial return. It contributes to our diversification, albeit minutely, but nevertheless contributes to further diversification. It represents an expansion of the industrial base. To those who are opposed to this project because it competes with other funds, number one, as you well know, there's a lot of misconception here. It doesn't compete with other existing funds. It doesn't use existing funds. And number two, and I think most important, it's a project that generates more new funds in the future and therefore contributes to the long-run sustainability of state government. So for these reasons, I strongly urge your positive action on Senate Bills 279 and 280, and thank you again for the opportunity.
Thank you very much, Bob. Appreciate your comments and your very positive, enthusiastic attitude, as usual. If in your review of the conditions you have any comments, and after you've had a chance to look at those, to get those to us, I would hope we're able to move this legislation as early as next Monday. We'd certainly welcome receiving those. And thank you very much. Were there any questions of Mr. Richards? Want to welcome Representative Pignalberry to the table, and we appreciate your having worked with our office on this legislation. I'd like to point out for the committee that we've been given information from Milt Barker. There had been a question raised in the House regarding whether or not there would be an impact of this project on the state debt capacity, and in that instance, the response was issuance of this debt would have no direct effect on the state's debt capacity, but that letter is in your file. We would go then to the next individual, or we would go to Fairbanks, and I think standing by we have John Sims from the Office of Mineral Development, then we'll hear from Earl Bestline. Mr. Sims, what do you
think? Madam Chair, Senators, for the record, my name is John Sims. I'm Director of the Office of Mineral Development. My office was responsible for coordinating and producing the Red Dog analysis in February last year for the Governor and recent updates of that report. The Department of Commerce and Economic Development, in concert with the administration, strongly supports state participation in the DeLong Mountain transportation system. We urge the legislature to show foresight and initiative with regard to this important issue. Investment in this regional transportation system is likely to return to the state multiples of the state's initial financial outlay. Thus, for once, Alaska has the opportunity to invest within its borders in a project that will actually make money. Confidence in that assertion is to be found in the realization of what Red Dog is and how it relates to a terrain which is becoming known as the Nurtec Sinkfield. First, a few remarks about Red Dog. Perhaps unparalleled anywhere, Red Dog could turn out to be the largest and richest zinc deposit ever discovered, certainly rivaling and perhaps displacing Australia's Broken Hill property, which has been mined for many years. Besides its size and richness, Red Dog possesses other attributes. It has a very favorable zinc to lead ratio, approximately 3-1. Secondly, it has a relatively high silver content, which is adds to its economic attractiveness. Thirdly, it is an open pit mine, and the economics of mining an open pit ore body are much better than, much more favorable than underground mining operations. Our analysis showed that perhaps 80% of the prospective zinc that could be developed in the rest of the world will be from relatively high cost underground producers. Another very favorable attribute which relates to the open pit character of the deposit is a very low waste to ore ratio. What all this translates to is that once in production, Red Dog will become a very cheap unit cost producer. Focus on Red Dog is only part of the picture, and impetus to develop the Red Dog will greatly aid the economics of bringing other deposits in the Nurtec region into production. Let me say a few words about the Nurtec Zinc Belt, because it brings out the likelihood of there being additional future users to this system. Not only is the development of Red Dog central to Cominco's corporate strategy far into the next century, but another giant of zinc production, Noranda, has recently taken a major position in the region. Jeff Snow, Vice President of Noranda, has explained that Noranda looks to the DeLong Mountain region to provide his companies medium to long-term replacement reserves. He did this in outlying Noranda's recent acquisition of interest in the Lick and a very large claim block in the area. But though eclipsed by Red Dog, the Lick deposit, in its own right, is shaping up as a truly world-class property. In comparative terms, in terms of tonnage and grade, is in the same league as some of the other prospective mines located outside of Alaska. Both Noranda and GCO, in the light of recent analysis of zinc market, believe that a decision to develop Lick could come within 5 years of Red Dog startup. The implication should be obvious. Another user providing additional revenue to the state and more jobs, year-round jobs, in an economically deprived region and in a state urgently in need of a more diversified economy. In closing, I would urge you to ignore the unqualified and misinformed commentary on this important issue and approve legislation needed to move forward. Thank you very much.
Fine. Thank you very much, Mr. Sims. And Earl, are you standing by?
Excuse me, this is the moderator in Fairbanks, and Dr. Wood does have a time constraint, and if it would be acceptable to you, he would like to go second. Would that be
fine? Certainly, we'd be very happy to hear from Dr. Wood. We did not realize he was on hand. Welcome, Dr. Wood, and if you'd go ahead.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Zalewski. This is William Wood, 665 10th Avenue, Fairbanks, Alaska, President Emeritus of the University of Alaska, but speaking here, as I always do, or myself alone. Since I have spoken out on several occasions in favor of the project, the Red Dog project, and since I've written rather positively and I hope constructively about it, I see no reason now, after reading the rather fine pieces of legislation your committee has drafted and has redrafted with the update I just looked at this morning, I see no reason to change my mind on any bit of it. My argument has been along the lines of the necessity to develop our idle resources, the necessity to create new wealth, the importance not of the immediate return, as Mr. Richards has just so ably and eloquently presented to you, not the immediate return from our direct return from the project, but all of the spin-out benefits that derive from the creation of new wealth. If we don't create new wealth from resources very quickly, as I'm sure you all realize, as you know these days, you run out of something to distribute. So let's get on with the prospect here of a major opportunity for the state to be a partner with the private enterprise and with one of our own regional corporations to bring into existence the new wealth of the Red Dog mine. I commend the committee for the very careful work that it has done in preparing this legislation. I note that in the revisions you have here, the substitute bill you've just had, of course, where you change some general things to a little more specificity, and I think that probably is all to the good. But the committee has the acumen, the dedication, the competence to do a thoroughly top-rate job on this, and I'm confident that the committee is going to do just that, and all of the interests of the public are going to be fully protected, but that we will not lose this great breakout opportunity to declare ourselves in favor for the development of our resources and the creation of new wealth from them, rather than continuing to bear the tremendous expense of keeping these such resources in an idle state. Thank you very much, and Godspeed on all you do.
Thank you very much, Dr. Wood. We'll come back now to Juno for two, and then we will again go to Anchorage and check in around the unit to see who's online. We have now Brian Allen. You've made a request that you and Mr. Barnett come forward together, and if you would introduce yourself, please, and then go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. My name is Brian Allen. I'm a volunteer for the Alaska Environmental Lobby, and we're both speaking for the Alaska Environmental Lobby.
Yes, and before you start, I just want to make note that we have a good number of people now online. We just got the information from the NANA region, and we will be going to you next after we hear from the two individuals here in Juneau. So John Schaefer, and then is it the Arnie Hansicki, or I'll have to ask for a pronunciation of that. You will be next after we complete Juneau. Yes, Mr. Brian, go ahead.
Thank you. I reside at 754 9th Avenue, Fairbanks, which is a couple of blocks from Dr. Wood. However, my testimony won't be as close to his as our residences are. I've been following the dog issue of the environmental lobby for 3 years. The issue is important to the environmental lobby for four reasons. First, we are interested in all legislation affecting natural resource conservation and development. Because of its size alone, the Red Dog Project deserves special attention. Second, the mine and transportation corridor are in an undeveloped part of the state, and we want the development to be sensible and environmentally responsible. Third, the proposed state subsidies to this project are huge. In effect, the state is going into the mining business with little public debate or approval. Fourth, the state is delegating enormous power to a state authority, the Alaska Industrial Development Authority. The history of the Alaska Power Authority and the Four Dam Pool shows that the state should be much more cautious with giving power to state authorities, the Industrial Development Authority included. In general, environmentalists ask three questions of projects involving non-renewable natural resources. Is it environmentally sound? Do the people in the region want it? Will it pay for itself? We ask this last question because we feel that non-renewable resources source projects should pay for themselves, that the facilities built for their benefit or the benefit of a group of mines in an area will rarely be used for later development. A good example is the Kennecott Mine, where the railroad that was built at great expense into that area was abandoned when the mine was shut down, or soon after when the mine was shut down. So getting back to those three points, is it environmentally sound? From what we know, the mine itself is acceptable on environmental grounds. We have concerns with the carrying out of the plans for environmental precautions, but at present we have no objections. We do worry about the occupational health of the workers who will be mining the lead. The access route has raised considerable controversy, but that issue will be resolved on a federal level, not the state, and so we have no official position. In fact, our individual groups have slightly different positions on the access route issue. The second point, do the people in the region want it? We're not qualified to speak on that issue. We are pleased to see the involvement of the NANA Corporation, the local hire provisions, the other benefits to the shareholders of the area. And so again, we have no objections on that basis. Our only objection is, will the project pay for itself? This is a question we've been asking for the last 3 years. In 1983, there was a funding mechanism proposed for the development of the area and for other areas in the state called the Regional Resource Development Authority. This bill would set up a number of authorities in different parts of the state to provide tax-exempt financing. In the discussion of that legislation, almost all of the emphasis was on the advantage of tax-exempt financing. There was very little discussion of direct grants to help out the project, direct grants to back up the bonds. And the general tenor of the discussion was that the difference between tax-exempt financing provided by the state and private financing by the mining companies would be sufficient, that would get them across the divide and into the area of profitability. Originally, the legislation did allow for state grants to back up the issuing of bonds. That was removed in committee, and the final legislation, which did pass and is now on the books, prevented state subsidy. I would suggest that the main reason that RRDAs are not being used, even though they're on the books, is that they do not provide state subsidy, that the mine, at this point, will not pay for itself. It may very well in the future, because it looks like a very important prospect, but I would urge the state should wait until it is profitable. In 1984, there was only one public hearing with public testimony on Red Dog financing. However, at the end of the session, a late night maneuver on the House side created another method to fund Red Dog. Two amendments were made on the floor to an existing bill, and something called the Economic Development Fund was created within ADA, the Alaska Industrial Development Authority. And this is the fund that is being proposed to back up the bond issue that you're considering. It's interesting to note that that same maneuver authorized $500 million in a bond issue for the Kinnickarnic Crossing. It seemed to be a totally irresponsible piece of legislation, in our opinion. All the financing plans being discussed, well, I've already gone into that, but let me skip ahead here. It also allowed state to pay off the state to help pay off the bonds. And this is a crucial difference. The Economic Development Fund allows there to be a state subsidy. And the tenor of the discussion had changed by this point. It's mostly about how big that subsidy will be. And I'm sure you'll hear more of that as the day progresses. At the same time, at the end of the session, over $3 million were appropriated directly to the transportation project. And this was the first direct appropriation of money to the road and port facility. This year, only lip service is being paid to the profitability of the mine. The proponents of the mine are casting their nets wider to add up enough profits and enough economic benefit to justify the development, because it's just not adding up in the specifics of the road. In other words, what is collected from tolls on the road will not pay off at market rate what the state is putting into the road. A good way to think of this project is in terms of present value. The present value of the state's investment should equal the present value of the return on that investment that the state gets. Getting back your $142 million 20 years later is not sufficient. You need to get back the interest on it. And you need to get back that interest at market rate if you're really not going to be subsidizing this project. If you are, you ought to have an idea of the magnitude of the subsidy, because a couple of differences in interest over 30 years constitute a very large subsidy, and one that might be very important to you in future years as oil revenues decline. Let me review how the subsidy can get larger or smaller, because this will be the crux of your effort here. The difference between the tolls that are negotiated with Taminco, and they haven't been agreed upon yet, and the repayments on the bond that the state make would be a subsidy of the mining road in the port, income versus revenue. The magnitude of that subsidy would depend on the tolls negotiated with Taminco. The more the tolls, the higher the subsidy. I may add in here that if you can negotiate contracts with the other users in the area, then you would have more tolls, and that might increase the profitability of the road. Interest rates for bonds are also a factor. If bond interest rates were high at the time of the bond sale, the state would have to pay more. The bond sale will be before construction, at least according to the current plans, all these things do change. But tolls would be collected only after construction, or possibly later. The longer the interval without toll payments, the greater the state contribution to the project. The longer you have to pay off the bond without anything to back you up. And finally, the cost of the project can change. If the road cannot go through Cape Krusenstern, it will be longer. And although it is probably still feasible from an engineering point of view, it will cost more. And that should be taken into account. So let me review the state's position. Taminco is the world's largest producer of lead and zinc. You have already contracted for a financial plan, giving you an idea of the profitability of this mine and the tolls that they can support on the road. But that plan isn't ready. You're operating blind until you have that plan. You may never know the exact profitability of the mine because the price of lead and zinc varies so much. The state has had considerable difficulty with oil and gas in this matter. But you'll have a better idea, a much better idea than you do now. Red Dog could be the world's most productive zinc mine. The mine is said to be in the best 10% in terms of operating costs once it gets running. It is a very good prospect. Still, the state is being pressured to commit to subsidize the mine before you have the facts on the profitability of the mine. I urge you to wait.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Brian. Mr. Barnett? I'm going to, just for people on the line as well as here, we do have a good number of people, so I would hope you would remember those following after you. We want testimony. We would hope that it is, it could be new testimony, so we're hitting different points. That's very useful. Yes, would you go ahead, sir?
Madam Chair, I'm Phil Barnett. I'm an attorney for the Sierra Club Legal Defense Fund. the environmental lobby was concerned about the constitutionality of the proposed legislation, asked me to review it and then to comment upon it. And I share the concern of the lobby about the constitutionality of the proposed financing package. The problem centers around the source of the subsidy the state must provide. The state hasn't chosen to issue a grant out of the general fund. Instead, it's planning to provide a subsidy of an indefinite amount out of future revenues that will flow into, that would otherwise flow into the general fund from this loan package of $140 million or so. That commitment or dedication of future revenues raises a problem under the dedication clause of the Alaska Constitution. When the drafters of the Constitution were debating this issue, they were recognized that in many states around the country, current legislatures, national level, with a balanced budget, the idea was each legislature should spend what it takes in or what is already in the general fund. It's easy to see the problem that this legislation generates, because it's financed not by current assets, not by current revenues, and not by the general, with monies out of the general fund. Instead, it's financed from a stream of income that will be received in the indefinite future, more or less invisible money. Thus, it seems to run afoul of the dedication clause in the Constitution. Not only does it seem to run afoul of the dedication clause, but it illustrates the wisdom of that clause. Legislature appears not to know exactly how much of a subsidy it's going to provide. It may be a large subsidy, it may be a small subsidy. Legislature doesn't know the terms of the toll payments that Cominco is offering. It also doesn't know how much of the bonds could be tax exempt, and how much will have, to what extent the ADA will be paying non-exempt interest rates. Without this knowledge, the amount of subsidy is unclear. Now, I think the legislature can make this kind of commitment, or it's possible when it's spending money of future Alaskans and future legislatures. If the legislature was spending the money that was generated this year, it would take a much closer look and proceed in authorizing or declining to authorize the subsidy in a more rational way. That is more or less the end of my comments on the dedication clause. It's a somewhat complicated issue, and I've prepared a brief handout of background material that goes into a little more depth on the legal points.
Fine, we'll make that available. Was that the extent of your... That,
well, just one point.
Mr. Allen?
Yes, I'd like to ask the chairman to ask Mr. Barnett to just go into the distinction between the Economic Development Fund and other revolving funds, because there is a crucial difference.
All right, that's not covered in the handout, I think.
It isn't emphasized.
All right, Mr. Barnett, do you want to speak to that?
There are a few exceptions to the prohibition on dedication of funds that have been recognized by the courts. One would seem to be revolving loan funds, and there are a number of those around. In that kind of fund, legislature dedicates some money to be issued out as loans. Loans are issued, then a stream of interest and principal payments come back to whatever agency was issuing them. It's permissible for that money that's flowing back in to be recycled into new loans. That was one of the several narrow exceptions that were permitted. It's easy to see the difference between that and this project. These loans are coming from a variety of purposes. None of them have anything to do with the Red Dog project. And not only that, they're not being recycled into new loans, but they're going into some construction project. So that exception does not seem to cover this financing mechanism.
Thank you very much. Thank you, gentlemen. Senator Rajar.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chairman. I apologize for not being here. I had other commitments, and maybe you may have gone over this before. No, I'm sorry. Thank you, Madam Chairman. And you may have covered this in previous testimony before I arrived, but do you have any alternative sources where funding could be derived for this particular project?
I would
think that the most sensible way to proceed is to get an idea of how much the subsidy is needed, and then to allocate that out of the general fund as part of the capital budget.
Further questions? Senator?
I guess I'm still trying to form an opinion on this particular project. So how long would you anticipate something like that taking?
The principal missing element is the finance plan, I suppose. And that's due out in August. The finance plan is supposed to look in detail at how a project like this can be financed.
Fine. Thank you very much. Appreciate that. We'll go now to Banana Region. We have a tremendous number of people on the line. If at all possible, please confine your remarks to not more than 5 minutes. We'd like to, as I say, hit everybody. Mr. Schaefer, are you there in contribute? And then we'll also take Arnie Hansicki, or how I'm mispronouncing that, I think. John?
Thank you, Sir Jaluski, and the rest of the members of your committee. I just wanted to take a minute to thank all of you for the work you've done on putting together the legislation that's before you, and to let you know that I still support your legislation wholeheartedly. And I'd like to hire that guy that was on just before you to lobby for us before the legislature a 50% grant of some kind to take care of us. Any subsidies would be perfectly fine with me. And thank you.
Thank you, John. And just a moment. Senator Fisher has a question, John.
Hi, John. I do think we have a much better bill than some of the big things we're talking about before. As I've previously expressed myself on more than one occasion, the one thing I was insisting on was that be no subsidy involved, that the project repay the state's investment, including interest. Now the bill raises a new question that, at least in my mind, had not arisen. And that is a provision, I don't know if you have a copy of the latest draft, but on page 2, it says lines 8.5 to 12.5, that Nano Regional Corporation is required to agree in writing to make available to the Alaska Industrial Development Authority at no more than fair market value land needed for the port and road constructed as part of the project, and land needed for future expansion of the road and port. John, my question to you is in regard to at no more than fair market value. It would seem to me that this project being of direct benefit to NANA, partly justified by opening up lands, by providing access to lands owned by NANA, by providing an alternative transportation port for NANA communities, that this is the kind of a situation where I would assume that at least with respect to the road and probably the port, that any major private landowner would be, and I don't care whether it's a regional corporation or not, would be expected to dedicate the land to the public rather than talking about here at no more than fair market value. I was wondering what your response to that is, Jeff.
Senator Fisher, there are several ways of looking at that, and I'm open to negotiating that with the authority. One way of looking at that, of course, is the way we've looked at some of the use of some of our lands for municipal purposes in the villages for state. For state projects, for airports and roads, where we have at no cost turned over land or given the rights to use of land to the state for public purposes. But it's, there's another way of looking at this, and this is that this road and port won't be for public purposes. It will be for specific users who will pay a toll to the state. And so the state will get the benefit of that toll, and I think most people are thinking that that this is limited to right now to one user for 30 years, and that is not the case. The road and port will be used not only by Cominco, but by other users. They will pay a toll, and I think there's one way of looking at this is that if the state is going to continue to make money on this from users, then why should NANA give their land away for nothing?
Thank you, John.
Thank you very much. We'll take one more from Concert View, then to Anchorage, Fort Hue, and to Fairbanks. Would you go ahead and Concert View, please?
Yes, this is Arnie Hanschke, Box 896, Concert View, 20-year resident of Alaska, 3 years resident of the NANA region. Speaking for myself, I support the development of the Red Dog Mine, and I sense that support, having lived in the region this long. One of the questions that sometimes comes up when we talk about local hire provisions is, in order for that to be a reality, there needs vocational training for those residents. And to those who are concerned about that, I'd like to mention that Concert View Technical Center, an adult vocational training school, was built in 1981 to increase the state's adult vocational training capacity and to provide such training here within the region. We are working with NANA Corporation and others to develop the kinds of programs that will prepare local residents for the jobs needed at the Red Dog Project by the time it wants to open.
Fine, thank you very much. I appreciate your testimony. We'll go now to Anchorage and hear from two. I want to note that in the audience here at Juneau, we have Commissioner Nordale from the Department of Revenue and Commissioner Lonsberry from Commerce and Economic Development. We appreciate their presence and know we'll be hearing from them later on. In Anchorage now, I believe next, we have Jim Jenks and then Bob Devaney. If you would like to go ahead, Jim.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. My name is Jim Jenks. I'm the Executive Director of the Alaska Miners Association, 509 West 3rd Avenue in Anchorage. Speaking on behalf of the Alaska Miners Association, I'd like to express our very strong concern support for this project. Mr. Richard made some very eloquent points, as did many of the other speakers, concerning the need for new development. I would invite those who are concerned with the project to search their own minds and find out what other sources of new wealth do we have on the horizon for this state. Quite frankly, there are none. We need the new wealth rather than continuing merely to distribute the wealth that is generated from the single resource that we depend on for our economic base. Alaska is an incredibly rich resource state, possessing probably the larger portion of the nation's undeveloped resources, and yet we are dependent almost solely upon one single resource for our economic base. I can assure all of you from my conversation with people in the mining industry around the world that the NOTAC deposits, particularly the Red Dog, is the single most visible mining property in the world. And as such, it is almost an absolute barometer as to whether or not resource development can occur in Alaska. If we do not develop that project, the answer to the rest of the world is that we simply can't do that in Alaska. We are looking. Some of our speakers today have looked at the question of what are our subsidies to this project. We have to look and see what are our subsidies to other projects. Certainly we hear no great hue and cry about our subsidies of the airports and the other public use infrastructure that are used by most of the public. I would submit that the infrastructure that is proposed by your bill is very much in line with the type of infrastructure needed to develop those resources and the infrastructure that has been developed historically by the nation and other states in the nation. We in the mining community appreciate very much the support that the Senate Resources Committee and the other members of the legislature and the administration have given to working on this very vital project. We urge you to go forward with it. We urge all of our citizens to ask, how can we do this, rather than why can't we do this? That concludes my remarks.
Thank you very much, Jim. Bob Devaney, are you there, Bob?
He's approaching the mic.
Thank you. We'll go next to Fairbanks after we hear from you, Bob. Go ahead and identify yourself.
I'm Robert DeVay of Anchorage, Alaska, speaking solely for myself. And I think this mine probably is a bright spot on our horizon. I think that the only question that I might have in it is the bonding and the repayment of those bonds should be an absolute guarantee that the money is coming back to the state.
Here.
I don't believe that you should look at this as a subsidy organization. I mean, as a subsidy to this mining venture. If it's good enough to go, we shouldn't have to subsidize it. The other thing that was of interest to me is the payment of for the land that NANA is providing. And as a startup of the project, I would think that they would be more than happy to provide those lands, and maybe in the future, if everything panned out, they paid for them. But the start of any venture is the gamble that we're taking. I think that when we're getting short on bonding in the state, we want to preserve every dollar of bonding we can and be sure, rather than taking the gamble that we're going to make a bunch of money, see that we're not going to lose it. And I thank you for all the effort you people are putting into this.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Bob. We appreciate your testimony. We'll go to Fairbanks now, and Earl Weisslein, and then John Alfonsi, and then we will come back to Juneau. Go ahead.
Thank you, Senator Sturgill-Lewski, and members of the Resource Committee that are present. My name is Earl Weisslein. I'm a lifelong Alaskan. Mining has been my background. At present, I am the president of the Alaska Miners Association and also the chairman of the Mineral Development Committee of the Fairbanks Chamber of Commerce. We certainly thank you for the opportunity to express our thoughts on this important legislation that you are dealing with. This afternoon, very briefly, I speak with three hats. First, as a private citizen, I'm very much in favor of the proposed legislation because of the importance to this legislation to the people of Alaska. I base a lot of this on a historical background in Alaska. As a young man, I grew up in Alaska when there were major mines in operation. Alaska Juneau Gold Mining Company at Juneau, the Kennecott Copper Corporation that had its seaport at Cordova, United States Melody Finding and Mining Company, both at Nome and Fairbanks. Now, when the Depression of 1932 hit the United States, by firsthand observation, it's certainly my opinion that Alaska wasn't affected nearly to the adverse degree that the other states, continental United States, were. And this was because of the resource development that did exist in the various communities. It included fishing, it was lumbering, and it included the mineral industries. Now, my detailed thoughts on a personal basis are given in my letter of March the 22nd this year and the enclosures that were sent to Representative John Sun, of the Special Committee on loans, as well as to members of the legislature and including, of course, the Resource Committee. Rather than reviewing all of this, I would like to make this letter and the enclosures a part of the teleconference record. Now, wearing my second hat, representing Bucky Wright, who is president of the Greater Fairbanks Chamber of Commerce, and on behalf of the chamber, I express its endorsement of Senate Bills 279 and 280. The Chamber's endorsement is based on the information given in its resolution 1-285 pertaining to the DeLong Mountain Transportation Project. This is dated February 4th, 1985. It was sent to a number of legislators, as well as to the Senate Resource Committee and to members of the state administration. We would appreciate having the chamber resolution made a part of the record of this teleconference. Third, the official position of the Alaska Miners Association has been stated by Jim Jinks, the executive director of the association. I would add to what Jim has said, the strong endorsement given by the Alaska Miners Association for the DeLong Mountain Transportation System was stated in a letter and in a resolution that was sent to members of the legislature and to members of the state administration. Now, also, we'd like to have this letter and resolution made a part of the teleconference committee. All three of these go into a considerable amount of detail and touch on the majority of points that are expressed in the committee substitute for Senate Bill 280. I certainly encourage the Resource Committee to move to really move this in a hurry and to work towards giving us further diversification of the resource development of the state of Alaska. This also is based on the fact that perhaps many of you recall that before oil was found in Cook Inlet, the economic condition of Alaska was in a very serious condition. It was that oil, and then followed this by Pluto Bay, that gives us now the economy that all of us enjoy. Certainly thank you for the opportunity to present the foregoing information.
Thank you,
Senator Sergilewski, and members of the Resource Committee.
Thank you very much, Earl. I appreciate that. Is John Alfonsi there, please? And when we finish there, we'll be coming back, and if Mr. Kovanovic would like to come up to the table, we'll take him first when we come back from Fairbanks. Yes, go ahead.
Thank you very much. The gentleman spoke before me, President of the Miners Association, obviously had some points that he really thought were important and speaks from a vested interest, no doubt. I'm a student at the University of Alaska. My name is John Alfonsi. Frankly, Mr. Richards' testimony, I thought was a classic textbook case of underdevelopment in regions such as South Africa and things like that, where I've not really noticed a lot of parallels in his testimony toward the attitude that we can go into these poor, underdeveloped countries and have economic expansion, but we have to consider really who benefits. My biggest complaint, I'm a little overwhelmed. I cannot believe that in our great state here that we have these kind of people coming in wanting development, and even people who are lifelong Alaskans like William Wood, who are really, really pushing this thing. I'm dead against it, and I'll tell you why. I'm not much of a bureaucrat. I can't talk about bonding, and I can't talk about all these other things, but I do know what a lot of people think, and that is the same concern that Vic Fisher made so clear, and that is the future expansion of this road. We have something here called the DeLong Mountain Transportation Project. Now, just where are the DeLong Mountains? Well, they're in the middle, starting of the Brooks Range, at the beginning of the Brooks Range, and if you listen to what these guys are saying, they are bent on developing the entire Brooks Range and all the tonnage of everything that's there. Now, the environmentalists are concerned about the environment and whatnot like that, which is very interesting, but my concern is, where does it end? You know, where is this all going to end? We've got, I don't really think that, number one, the state can afford to invest that much money in a project like that. There are better places to put our dollars. And that is really my bottom line point, that there, especially as a student, particularly as a student, I see a lot of programs being cut. I see a lot of higher education really taking the gap. I see millions of dollars pouring into projects that are questionable. The return is questionable. Now, again, I'm not a bureaucrat. But I do know something about money. And there's a lot of money in for Cominco. Earlier, a guy asked you to basically ignore any of the testimony that you heard. Well, you know, that was against Red Dog. That's ignorant at best, in my opinion. I realize what cost to the state? Can we afford Red Dog? We're going to build another road. We can't maintain the ones we got. Tourism is our second biggest industry here. It would seem like we could do more to develop that. If you start off at Cape Krusenstern and put a road 60 miles into the DeLong Mountains, well, you know, then we just keep going, move it out a little bit across the Kobuk. Developer, bring those cats right in there, tear it up. Let's get going. What's the problem here? You know, why are all these people standing by and trying to stay and stop this whole thing from going? You know, these people are, you know, I can sit right here and see perplexion on their face. They don't understand what I'm talking about. I grew up here. I've been on a lot of parts of the state. I'm really interested in hearing the testimony of some of the subsistence interests in the area around Nana. I'm really interested in hearing what those people have to say. I don't think the big money is necessarily the way Alaska should go. I think that we have things we have right here in this state, and we don't need to put those dollars into a project like Red Dog, which is basically in the middle of nowhere. I'm really dead against it. One further point is that if you're going to fund this, which I assume no one has really made up their mind, as that road is going to go across the Brooks Range, it's going to take more money in the future. It's going to cost something. Somebody somewhere it's going to cost. And it isn't going to be the miners, because they're going to benefit. And it isn't going to be Cominco, because they're going to benefit. And I wonder if the state's going to benefit. I wonder about my education and my kids' education, too. And I really wonder, if you're going to fund this, then why the hell aren't you funding the university?
Fine. Thank you very much. I appreciate your testimony, Mr. Alfonsi. We'll go now to Juno and Mr. Govinovich. Go ahead, sir.
Madam Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Paul Govinovich. I'm the manager for Western Exploration of Naranda Exploration. Naranda Exploration is a wholly owned U.S. subsidiary of Naranda Inc., which is a major multinational mining company with headquarters in Toronto, Canada. We are one of the major zinc producers of the free world, and in 1984 mined approximately 450,000 tons of zinc metal. Naranda Exploration has been involved in the search for mineral deposits in Alaska since 1973. We are currently involved in exploration at various stages upon multiple projects throughout the state. In addition, Naranda Mining, a sister company to our exploration arm, is the operator of the Greens Creek Joint Venture upon the moderate-sized but very high-grade massive sulfide deposit within 20 miles of the city. On February 1st of this year, we concluded an agreement with DCO Minerals of Houston, Texas, that would allow us to explore a large block of ground in the DeLong Mountains. More recently, we concluded an additional agreement with that same company to become operators for the continued exploration and development of the Lick property, a sister massive sulfide deposit to Red Dog. I am here today to support the concept of the state's involvement in providing a financial vehicle for the development of a transportation system to what I am confident will become the DeLong Mountain Mining District. John Sims wanted to call it the Noatak Zinc Belt. We'll have to get together. We can presently identify two major deposits in that district, Red Dog and Lick. The viability of any new mining operation, however, is directly related to the capital required for development and production. State support of a transportation system into the DeLong Mountains will greatly enhance the economics of these deposits. Furthermore, the majority of ore deposits of the type that are presently being found in the DeLong Mountains geologically occur in groups or clusters. New exploration will follow mine development, and I am confident new discoveries should result. Certainly these discoveries will not all be made by the Cominkos, the Narandas, but also by other mining companies or exploration groups. When one questions who will use and benefit from the construction of a transportation system into the DeLong Mountain area, there are two answers. There will be the direct and indirect users and beneficiaries, and also present and future users and beneficiaries. The companies involved in the initial development of mineral deposits in the DeLong Mountain District will be the direct and present users. But considering the history of the world's mining districts, it is safe to assume that there will be many future users of this transportation system as exploration continues in the area. In addition, the villages located proximal to the road and port may also be considered direct users and beneficiaries. And finally, the state of Alaska, in its entirety, must be considered an indirect but very tangible beneficiary of the transportation system. Noranda is presently exploring throughout the zinc provinces of the free world in search of resources to augment the forecasted mine production shortfall that we see happening by 1990. We have selected the DeLong area on the basis of demonstrated geological potential and, with a transportation system, favorable economics to produce. Thank you very much for your time. I would be pleased to answer any questions.
Thank you very much, Senator Fisher.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Paul, thanks for your testimony. This is very useful. I have a couple of questions. First of all, would you assume that if the lake deposit is brought in, proves out within 2-3 years, as I gather, a decision might be made, that at that point, GCO, Noranda, whoever else is involved, would use the transportation facilities, that you would pay your proportion share of the tolls?
I'm certain we'd be prepared to do it. The economics of the deposits would be predicated on that.
Secondly, the committee substitute for Senate Bill 280 provides that that there be provision to guarantee equitable access to facilities for all users. I assume that since you will need the access, this is a critical provision to keep in this bill.
Yes, it is, Senator. In fact, we are assuming that access is guaranteed.
Okay. Then I have a side question. What is the comparative size of Noranda and Pamlico?
You mean as to the size of the deposits?
No, worldwide operations.
Company-wide?
As companies.
I'd say we're probably more diversified and with a higher gross revenue, and we're very equivalent in terms of total production.
Thank you very much, Paul.
Fine, thank you. Mr. Kennedy, would you come forward, and after we hear from you, and I'm going to admonish you again about time with a good number of people to be heard, we're going to go to next. Mr. Kennedy?
My name is David Kennedy. I'm a senior geologist at GCO Minerals Company. I believe that everyone is aware that GCO and Noranda have the Lick deposit located approximately 12 miles northwest of Red Dog. The Lick deposit is presently a prime example of a future user for the DeLong Mountains transportation system. There's no question in our mind that development of this infrastructure will enhance development opportunities in northwestern Alaska and will provide long-term benefits for the people of the region and the state as a whole. GCO supports legislation that will facilitate financing and construction of this transportation system. Guaranteed access is an issue which GCO has been concerned about for some time, and we're pleased to see that the current legislation has included provisions that help assure that the road and port on the DeLong Mountains transportation system will be available to serve all potential users of the region. The basis for guaranteed equitable access to the transportation system has also been recognized by the Alaska Department of Natural Resources and is a condition attached to the policy that has determined that only one transportation system will be constructed in the DeLong Mountains region. The complexity of land ownership, particularly the large portions of the transportation system located on private corporate lands, establish the need for special and specific guarantees of access for future users. Very simply, a transportation system financed with public funds cannot function as a regional transportation system unless future access all along the road and at the port is guaranteed. It's our assumption that this access is guaranteed by the present legislation. We believe that it is imperative that those conditions which guarantee future access to the transportation system remain in the legislation. In conclusion, let me reiterate GCO's strong support for Senate Bills 279 and 280, and let me also say that these terms and conditions of guarantee of access to the transportation system are necessary to protect state interests and future economic development under any conceivable financing plan.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Kennedy. Appreciate your testimony. We'll go now to Kotzebue, and then I've just discovered we have someone in Nome, so we'll go to Nome after Kotzebue. Is Marie Schwind from Manila on hand? Marie, and then Fred Wiemar.
Yes, ma'am, Madam Chairman. This is Marie Schwind. I just stated the President of Manila Association. First, I'd like to say good afternoon to you and the Resource Committee members.
Good afternoon.
For several years, Manila Association has been working with Banana Corporation and other interested people to see that the Arendal mine becomes a reality. Manila is primarily concerned with the health and social services, the education, and the preservation of our natural environment for those of us living in this region. And yes, Manila Association supports the development of this facility. We are approaching the problems of development with open eyes, not trusting the chance, or idly hoping that development will not change the character of our community. The environment, the basis for subsistence, and the values associated with subsistence, the Manila Board of Directors representing each village within this region, has recently entered into a program of cooperation with the state and other agencies implementing subsistence. And one of the projects that we're currently working on is the subsistence mapping. Each of the villages within the region will be contributing to the development of these maps with the wisdom of those that come to them through their experiences in subsistence living. The reason why I wanted to address this, what the gentleman earlier had stated, what are the people within the Nava region, what are the concerns about subsistence? Manila Association, along with a number of other programs that we're providing services to within this region, we'll continue to work with these villages to monitor the progress of our subsistence program and to ensure that our subsistence base will not be offended by unrestricted or careless environment or economic development. And this has already been addressed by the Nana Regional Corporation and Cominco, with them working with two of our villages more closely located to the Red Dog mine. And also to be better prepared for the economic opportunities that will be made available through Red Dog, Manila Association will continue to work with the Chukchi Community College and the Prospect Technical Center to develop the type of training that will be necessary to enable our native people in this region to take advantage of the new employment opportunities that will become available through Red Dog. And the other thing that we're addressing is we are definitely interested social impact of Red Dog and do not intend to depart from our original concerns for our cultural heritage or the integrity of our lifestyle. So Manila Association will continue to work with NANA, with the other agencies within this region to the development of the Red Dog. And therefore we, Madam Chair, we strongly support and request that the state fund and make available funds for the road and port for the operations of Red Dog. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Marie, for your testimony. Is Fred Wiemar there? Fred?
Yes, I am. My name is Fred Wiemar, and I'm the executive director of Manila's Manpower, a nonprofit corporation here in Kotzebue, whose general area is in employment and training for the people of the Nana region. We at Manila's Manpower are in support of the legislation that you're taking testimony on today. The rural areas in the past have been self-sufficient. Recent history shows that this is no longer true. The number of job seekers that we have in the Nana region are increasing as other parts of the economy slow down. If this trend continues and does not change soon, we will have to go and compete for jobs in the urban areas or become an economic burden on the state of Alaska within the region. This is your chance to help us get back not only to self-sufficiency, but to contribute to the economy of Alaska. And there's nothing that we'd like to do better up here than to feel that we can run our own lives. Excuse me. I would also like to speak as the chairman of the Nana Coastal Resource Service Area Board. The environmental lobbyist who has spoken people of the region who depend on the land for their livelihood. The Manus, the RSA board, has looked at the project, the Red Dog project, and every member on the board is in support of the development of Red Dog. And we do this because we do see where there is a lot of local control. The subsistence committee that has been put into place by NANA has the right to shut down the project if they do see that it is hurting the environment or any of the subsistence activities that will be taking place in the NANA region. In closing, I would urge you to pass this legislation that you have in front of you, and we both at Manila's Manpower and the NANA CRSA wholeheartedly support the bill. Thank you very much.
Fine, thank you very much, Mr. Wemar. We're going now to Nome, and I apologize for having missed. I thought that was to help me pronounce your name. I believe it's Mr. W.E. Vaughn, is that correct, in Nome? And then we will go back to Anchorage for a couple more.
We have no one here.
This is the moderator in Anchorage, and Mr. Vaughn is in Anchorage from Nome.
Well, all right. I was sort of half right, but I'd be delighted to hear from him. Would you go ahead, sir?
Apparently, he has...
All right, let's...
What's this guy on this place, people?
We're having a little levity here that probably isn't moving us ahead very fast here. Cindy, are you on hand there in Anchorage? Cindy Roberts, and then Mr. Albert, and then we'll go up to Fairbank.
Senator, thank you very much for this opportunity. At this time, in addition to my own testimony, I would like to submit a resolution by Common Sense for Alaska in support of the Long Mountain Transportation System. President-elect Jack Hayes was here, but due to other commitments, he had to leave the room.
Yes, we'd be happy to have that. We do have the resolution on hand. We're pleased to have that. And did you have any additional comments?
Yes, I do, Senator. If you'll notice in the version that will be telecopied down to you, there were a few changes in the resolution, unless you've received one in the last 24 hours. So I recommend that this one also be counter-checked to it.
Cindy, I might make note, we have received the new one. It has been distributed to members of the committee.
Okay, well, then you have Mr. Hayes' thanks and encouragement on with the project. At this time, I would like to offer my own testimony. I'm a consultant in government and community relations and vice president of Malcolm B. Robertson Associates. I became knowledgeable about the Cominco project at Red Dog in 1983 when I helped prepare a slide presentation for the State Office of Mineral Development on the potential of Alaska's mineral industry. Prior to that, I had taken the first Alaska Miners Association tour of Canadian mining sites in the High Arctic and was impressed with how the modern mining can be compatible with the needs and values of Arctic and subarctic environments and cultures. The Red Dog project is especially impressive to me as it combines the expertise of a company that has a track record of doing this kind of development right with the creativity and sensitivity of one of Alaska's most innovative regional native corporations. Truly, this joint venture is pioneering in how to combine mineral development with the ways and the values of Alaska's Eskimo people. My question today is not whether the state should assist with the road length, but why we are so fearful to begin. I'm aware of no other such project in Alaska that has the lack of risk on the state's part and so much to gain. As I understand it, we are not addressing intensity as we have subsidized normal road building and hydro development across Alaska. We have been asked for a cash advance, no more. The company has pledged its full resources to pay us back for this investment. What else do we want? We're being offered a chance to diversify our economy, to provide jobs in a rural region of the state that has no other major cash economy outside of government. We also can support a unique and positive joint venture between Alaska's native community and the modern industry that will assist all of Alaska's regional corporations throughout the state. which will also, in the long run, generate revenues to the state. If you say the issue has become a lack of state dollars to invest, I say let's be credible. It's high time we began investing in projects that will produce revenue and not just eat it up. I urge the legislature to invest in our own people and the future of our economy and to move ahead with this piece of legislation. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Cindy. I appreciate that. Is Mike Albert there, please?
It sounded like a campaign speech, like it's supposed to have fought.
Madam Chairman, my name is Mike Abbott. I'm the Projects Coordinator of the Resource Development Council, and we're pleased to present our support of both the committee substitutes today, 279 and 280. We think they're excellent bills. We'd like to see them move as soon as possible. We think it's appropriate that the legislature take this action, although we would have wished that a financing plan from the Industrial Development Authority had been presented before this time. We certainly want to thank the committee at this point for introducing the legislation and giving everyone something to look at, something concrete. We think this legislation does provide for adequate safeguards for the state in terms of their bonding authority and the capital advance. We do want to see this go forward. We think it's about time that Red Dog and mining in general got a good shot in the arm, and we think this is a good way to do it. The only concern that we've got regarding this, and maybe it's just a misinterpretation, we would like to see some specific reference to recreational use of the road and port, or at least the road facility, mentioned in the legislation. It's unclear to us as to whether